Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Leviticus chapter 4, verses 1 through 35. The entire chapter, we will look at the sin offering. I'm going to call it Sin Offering Part 1 because there's a little bit in chapter 5 that covers the sin offering also. Our context is this. In our last chapter, chapter 3, the entire chapter covered the peace offering. So we start now with Leviticus 4, verses 1 through 2. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, if a person sins unintentionally in any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and commits any of them." Now the Lord is still speaking to Moses. I'm assuming this is in the tent of meeting, where he's been handing out all the Levitical laws. This is the sin offering he's talking about here. Notice that it's if any person sins unintentionally. In verse 2, that's because the sin offering only covered unintentional sins. Intentional sins, you either got executed or exiled or fined or something bad. Something bad happened to you. I'm not sure about the fine, but exile or death was a very typical punishment for intentional sin. So we're talking about unintentional sin here. Sins by accident, sins by mistake. I'm going to give you a table summary of the sin offering. The elements of the sin offering differed depending upon the status of the offeror. If the offeror was the high priest, or if the offeror was the whole congregation, then a young bull or a bull was sacrificed. I say young bull or bull because the translations differ on bull. It's son of the herd. Is that a young bull or is that just a bull? It doesn't matter. It's a bull. The blood is sprinkled in front of the veil, the inner veil, the second veil, the veil between the holy place and the holy of holies, seven times. And then the blood was put on the horns of the altar of incense, which is the golden altar inside the tabernacle at that veil, the second veil, the inner veil. That is if the sin sacrifice was for the high priest or the whole congregation. If it was just for a leader of Israel, an elder of Israel, a ruler of Israel, a family leader, a tribe leader, tribal leader, the sacrifice was a male goat, and the horns, the blood is not put in the altar of the golden altar inside, but the blood was only put on the horns of the bronze altar of burnt offering in the courtyard. If the offeror who had committed unintentional sin was a common person, not a leader, but just a common person of Israel, then there was a choice, either a female goat or lamb is offered. Male goats for the leader, female goat, or a lamb for the common person. Notice the common person had a choice, either a goat or a lamb, female. Then if the common person was poor, we'll see this in the next chapter, in the next audio, the offerer was a dove or a pigeon, blood on the altar of the horns of the burnt offering. And if the offerer was extremely poor, very poor, then he offered one-tenth of an ephah of fine flour. That's also in the next chapter. Now, what was the purpose of the sin offering? Well, first of all, it was a mandatory atonement. I say mandatory. It was not a voluntary offering like the peace offerings, like the burnt offerings. It was mandatory. You had to do it. It was for unintentional sin, as I've mentioned. It was for the purpose of confessing the offeror's sin before the Lord. It was for the purpose of receiving forgiveness for that sin. And that means civil forgiveness, of course. Only God can forgive us eternally, spiritually. And it was to cleanse the offeror from Levitical defilement. Now, God's portion, as usual, was the fat. The fat is the best part of the animal. When I say fat, I mean the kidney fat, the liver fat, the enteral fat, and the fat connecting it, and the fat tail if it was a sheep. The priest portion differed. If the offeror was the high priest in the congregation, the priest didn't get a portion. All the rest of the animal was burnt, besides the fat, was burnt outside the camp. And if it was a sin offering for a leader or for a common person, the remainder was not burnt outside the camp. Rather, the priest ate the remainder in the court of the tabernacle, in the courtyard. There are other priestly regulations given in Leviticus 6 and Numbers 15. We're not going to go over them until we get there to keep things a little bit simpler. The idea that the sin is unintentional, we see this a lot in the Old Testament law. Let me give you some examples. Leviticus 5:15, if a person acts unfaithfully and sins unintentionally against the Lord's holy things, then he shall bring his guilt offering to the Lord. Numbers 15:30-31, but if the person who does anything defiantly, now that's the opposite of unintentionally. It means with a high hand, premeditated, you did it on purpose. And it says in Numbers 15:31, this person shall be completely cut off, killed, or exiled, was probably killed. Hebrews 9:7, but into the second, that's the holy place, only the holy of holies, only the high priest enters once a year, not without taking blood, which he offers for himself and for the sins of the people committed in ignorance. Committed in ignorance. So that great atonement, day of atonement ceremony was only done for unintentional sins. And then there's an interesting verse in Hebrews 10:26. For if we go on sinning willfully after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins. Now, of course, this is one of these Calvinist Arminian disputed scriptures. If you say that, well, either way, on the Arminian or Calvinist viewpoint, it seems to me you have problems. If the Arminian says, well, this is talking about somebody who was saved, who received the knowledge of the truth, and he got saved, and now he backslides and apostatizes, and he goes back to Israel, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, that means he's going to lose his salvation. I don't think so. On the other hand, the typical Reformed answer is this. This person received a notional knowledge of the truth, not a saving knowledge of the truth, but just an intellectual knowledge of the truth, and so he didn't lose his salvation. But then I ask, well, if that's so, if he turns away from the gospel, why do you say there's no longer a sacrifice for sins? You mean God can't save an apostate? He can save murderers. He can't save an apostate. Well, I think the answer to this is, in my opinion, the person who has received the knowledge of the truth is a true Christian. He's received saving knowledge of the truth. But what the author of Hebrews is saying is, look, the person is saved. He's already saved in the church through the blood of Jesus Christ. If he goes back to the Jewish sacrificial system, in that system, there's no longer a sacrifice for sins because Jesus is now the sin offering. There is no longer a sin offering that you can do to take care of your sins in the Jewish law and in the Jewish Levitical system. So don't apostatize and go to Israel. I don't think it means you got a person saved and therefore there's no longer a sacrifice for sins, including Jesus. His sacrifice for sins doesn't count. No, I think what it's talking about is there's no longer a sacrifice for sins in the Jewish Levitical system. But anyway, that's off the subject. I love that controversy, so I thought I'd throw that in there. But the point is, without cavil, nobody disputes this, the sin offering was for unintentional, not intentional sins. Now, how could an unintentional sin happen? With all the commands in the law, it would be very easy to accidentally violate one of them. And the law was very merciful and forgiving for these unintentional sins. Now, here's a couple of examples. What happens if the priest ate the fat around the kidneys thinking it was the fat around the heart? It's an easy mistake to make, I would think. I don't know how you distinguish fat. Fat could have been laid in one place. The priest got mixed up about what the fat was. Well, that was unintentional sin. He didn't mean to sin. How about someone, this is John Gill's example. John Gill has another example. What happens if a man has sex with a woman thinking she is his wife? But because of a legal mess up with the officials, they're not actually married. Something hasn't been signed yet. Well, that's unintentional. Now, just as a preview for the rest of the chapter, we have the sins of the anointed priest are in verses 3 through 12. The sins of the whole Israelite community. The anointed priest is the high priest, probably. Then the sins of the whole Israelite community, that's in verses 13 through 21. Then the sins of a leader of Israel, verses 22 through 26. And the sins of a typical ordinary member of the community is verses 27 through 35. And let me point out here that once you get the basic idea behind you, when we look at the sin offering for the high priest, it's basically the same all the way through with a few minor variations, so we can get through this fairly quickly. So we go to verse 3 in Leviticus 4. If the anointed priest, that's probably the high priest, sins so as to bring guilt on the people, then let him offer to the Lord a bull without defect as a sin offering for the sin he has committed. Well, first of all, anointed priest. Adam Clark says that's most probably the high priest. Well, most people say it is the high priest. We can look at some other scriptures. It's a little ambiguous, but let's look at some other scriptures. Leviticus 6:20, this is the offering which Aaron and his sons are to present to the Lord on the day when he is anointed. Well, Aaron was the high priest when he is anointed, so he was the anointed priest. Leviticus 6:22, the anointed priest will be in his place among his sons. Who will be in his place among his sons shall offer it. And that's talking about the successors to the high priest, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, Aaron's sons, high priest. So the anointed priest there, Leviticus 6:22, is the high priest. Leviticus 21:10, the priest who is the highest among his brothers, on whose head the anointing oil has been poured. So you see, the author tends to say that the priest who is anointed, in the context of those other verses, you can tell it's the high priest. So we're going to say this is the anointed priest is the high priest. Now, notice when he sins, he brings guilt on the people. Well, why should the people be guilty if the priest sins? Well, because, as the NIV Study Bible points out, the relationship between a high priest and Israel is so close that sin by the former, by the high priest, will bring guilt on the latter, on Israel. Now, notice also it says, in the New American Standard Bible translation, let the high priest offer to the Lord. Let him offer to the Lord. Well, that's a little weak. It sounds like, well, let's allow him to if he wants to. No, the NIV says he must bring. And the Holman Christian Standard Bible says he is to bring a sin offering to the Lord. Translation issue there. The sin offering, as a matter of fact, was compulsory, as we'll see in verses 14, 23, and 28 in this chapter as we go through. The burnt and peace offerings were voluntary, but this sin offering was mandatory, compulsory. So I think that's a little bit of a weak translation there. He is to offer, he must offer to the Lord a bull without defect. Now, let's go about this bull. Let's look at this bull issue. The NIV, the KJV, the Holman Christian Study Bible say a young bull. The NASB says a bull. Well, I'm not going to make a distinction because I don't think anybody can tell. Young's literal translation calls the bull a son of the herd, and I think that's where the idea of young bull comes from, because he's a son of the herd. Yeah, but he could just mean he's a member of the herd, if you think about it. So that might be where the differences in translations come from. We go to Leviticus 4:4. He, that's referring to the high priest, shall bring the bull to the doorway of the tent of meeting. Of course, that's the altar of burnt offering, because that's near the doorway. Before the Lord, the tent of meeting, of course, is the tabernacle. He shall bring the bull to the doorway of the tent of meeting before the Lord, and shall lay his hand on the head of the bull and slay the bull before the Lord. So somewhere in the courtyard, the burnt offering was slain to the north side of the altar, and some of the later sin offerings that we're going to talk about were slain in the same place where the burnt offering was slain. So I'm assuming it's the same place, the north side of the altar in the courtyard, but it doesn't say. So he, the high priest, shall bring the bull and shall lay his hand on the bull and slay the bull. So, as John Gill points out, that's the high priest himself slays his own bull. Now, three principles of atonement are found in this one verse. Principle number one, substitution. The bull was killed in place of the sinner. Principle number two, identification. The offerer laid hands on the bull, so the bull is now identified with the offerer, just like Christ is identified with his people. And principle number three, death of the substitute. The bull is slaughtered instead of the offerer. So there has been capital punishment administered for sin, but the recipient of that capital punishment is not the high priest. It's the bull. Substitutionary atonement. We go down to verses 5, 6, and 7 in Leviticus 4. Then the anointed priest, the high priest, is to take some of the blood of the bull and bring it to the tent of meeting. And the priest shall dip his finger in the blood and sprinkle some of the blood seven times before the Lord in front of the veil of the sanctuary. The veil of the sanctuary, of course, is the inner veil between the holy place and the holy of holies. The holy place was where the bread of the presence was, the 12 loaves of the table on the south side of the holy place. And then on the north side of the holy place, you had the seven branch candlestick. And then there was a veil, purple, gold, and scarlet, woven, hanging on four poles, that separated that holy place from the 10 by 10 by 10 cubit holy of holies where the Ark of the Tabernacle was. So there's the veil there, that famous veil. Seven times in front of that veil, the blood was to be sprinkled. Verse 7, Leviticus 4. The priest shall also put some of the blood on the horns of the altar of fragrant incense. That's the golden altar, which is at the doorway where the inner veil was. The priest shall also put some of the blood on the horns of the altar of fragrant incense, which is before the Lord in the tent of meeting. It's before the Lord because it's at the doorway, and the Lord was in the Holy of Holies. And all the blood of the bull he shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering, which is at the doorway of the tent of meeting. And verse 5, he says that the high priest is to take some of the blood of the bull, which was drained into a bowl like they always did, and bring it into the tent of meeting. So he's coming from the courtyard where he slayed the bull. He walks into the holy of holies, the holy place first. He walks toward the back And then he dips his finger in the blood, his right forefinger, as the NIV Study Bible says, Leviticus 14:16 says that the priest, well, this is what Leviticus 14:16 says. The priest shall then dip his right hand finger into the oil that is in his left palm, and with his finger sprinkle some of the oil seven times before the Lord. Well, first of all, this is oil in another ceremony. It's not blood. And second of all, the translation, New American Standard Bible, as well as the Holman Christian Study Bible, says it's his right hand finger. The NIV Study Bible says it's his forefinger. I don't know how they know that. But at any rate, we can infer that it was the priest took his forefinger, stuck it in the blood, and then started, probably with his thumb, he had to sprinkle. He started sprinkling the blood seven times in front of the veil. Now, seven, of course, is your typical symbol of perfection and completeness that is everywhere in the Old Testament. If you had a nickel for every time seven was used, you'd be a millionaire. Now, what's the symbolism here? It's if you want to go into the Holy of Holies, where God is, where the Shekinah glory is, you got to go through blood. There's got to be blood. There's got to be something that is atoned for your sin, because a sinner cannot go into the presence of a holy God. And so the blood, having atoned for that sin, provided access to God. So that's what the seven, complete access, seven times, seven sprinklings of blood. The life is in the blood. The animal has been sacrificed to God, so sin has been atoned for, and therefore the offerer, the high priest in this case, is able to be forgiven for his sins. We read here in Hebrews 10:19, therefore, brethren, since we have confidence to enter the sanctuary by the blood of Jesus, and that's referring to heaven, of course. Jesus' blood gets us into heaven. I assume that holy place there is Holy of Holies. Therefore, brethren, since we have confidence to enter the holy places, the New American Standard Bible has, that's the Holy of Holies, by the blood of Jesus. Now, after the sprinkling in front of the veil seven times, then the priest, the high priest, put some of the blood on the horns of the golden altar of fragrant incense, which is right there at the door. Why four horns? Well, four is a symbol of strength, a very standard symbol of strength. The NIV Study Bible says that the four horns of the altar were symbols of the atoning power of the sin offering. And that makes sense to me. Four horns, strength. And then the rest of the blood is carried back out the door, back out the doorway at the east side of the holy place, east side of the tent of meeting, east side of the tabernacle. The blood is then taken to the bronze altar and sprinkled to the base, which is to show that the life of the bull has been offered up to God, and that life of that bull, of course, represents the life of the sinning high priest. Offered up to God and atoned for. And so, to summarize here, the blood ended up at three places: on the horns of the golden altar, on the curtain before the Holy of Holies, and at the base of the bronze altar. Now, I've got a musing here, which I don't think is really accurate, but I asked myself this question: is there symbolism in putting the rest of the blood at the base of the bronze altar, or was it just practical because there needed to be a place to put the blood? Remember, the blood's got to be holy. Or it could be both, actually. Got to put the blood somewhere. But I also think that symbolically, the blood symbolized the life that was necessarily taken because of sin, and it had to be on the bronze altar. All right, we go now to Leviticus 4, verses 8 through 10. He, that's the high priest, shall remove from the bull all the fat of the bull of the sin offering, the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat which is on, or as the NIV says, connected to the entrails, and the two kidneys, with the fat that is on them, which is on the loins, and the lobe of the liver, which he shall remove with the kidneys. Verse 10, just as it is removed from the ox of the sacrifice of peace offerings, and the priest is to offer them up in smoke on the altar of burnt offering. Now, I talked about this fat in great detail when I did the chapter on peace offerings, which was Leviticus 3. So I'm not going to talk about that again, except I will point out that in addition to the liver fat, the kidney fat, and the entrail fat, and the fat connected to the entrail fat, there's also the lobe of the liver fat, by the way. The lobe is said to be a fatty covering of the liver. Some people say it actually includes a little piece of the liver. But also the kidneys are connected. The fat with the kidneys are probably still attached to the kidneys, because it says, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, so they burn up. So God gets the kidneys plus the fat, and this is just like a peace offering. And of course, fat symbolizes the best of, as the King James has in another place, the fat of the land. It means the best of the land. So God gets the best of the bull. And that's appropriate, of course. We go to Leviticus 4, verses 11 and 12. But the hide of the bull and all its flesh, with its head and its legs and its entrails and its refuse, that is, all the rest of the bull, he is to bring out to a clean place outside the camp where the ashes are poured out, and burn it on wood with fire. Where the ashes are poured out, it shall be burned. Now, the hide and the flesh, the head and the legs and the entrails and the refuse, the dung, all of that we're just going to call the remainder of the bull, the fat plus the remainder. The remainder has a bunch of stuff in it, but it's just easy to remember fat and the remainder. Now, part of that remainder is the hide of the bull. Now, there is a distinction between the burnt offering and the sin offering. When we talked about the burnt offering in chapter 1 of Leviticus, we noted that the hide was skinned off and offered to the officiating priest, and he got a nice piece of leather. But not with a sin offering. He got burnt up. I guess you could look at it symbolically. The high priest is not going to profit from his sin. He's not going to come out ahead on this thing. Jameson Foster and Brown says the burning of the hide completely showed strikingly the horror of sin. So all the meat, all that steak, and then the head and the legs, the bones and all that, the entrails, the inner guts, and the dung and the intestines, all of that burn up. Now, the bull is to be burnt up, verse 12, in a clean place outside the camp. First, what does outside the camp mean? It means outside the doorway of the courtyard, not the doorway of the tabernacle, but the doorway of the courtyard around the tabernacle. And, of course, when it means clean, it doesn't mean physical cleanliness. It means ceremonial clean. In other words, a woman that's just menstruated couldn't have been working out there, a man with a seminal nocturnal emission or something, or somebody that's touched a dead animal is unclean. No, it means there's nothing to make it Levitically and ritually unclean. Now, why does the bull have to be burned outside the camp for the sin offering? Well, because God was present in a special way in the camp as well as the tabernacle. And so we're not going to have an animal that has had sin symbolically transferred to it. We're not going to have a sinning bull inside the camp where God is. That's the rough idea behind this. Let's look at this idea of outside the camp and God being in the camp. First of all, God being in the camp, Numbers 5:3, you shall send away both male and female. You shall send them outside the camp, so they will not defile their camp where I dwell in their midst. God's in the camp. Deuteronomy 23:14, since the Lord your God walks in the midst of your camp to deliver you and to defeat your enemies before you. Therefore, your camp must be holy, and he must not see anything indecent among you, or he will turn away from you. So God is in the midst of the camp with the Israelites, and God is holy. You can't put a sinful bull in the midst or in the area where a holy God lives. Now let's look at some other scriptures that talk about sin being outside the camp. Hebrews 13:11-13. For the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the holy place by the high priest as an offering for sin are burned outside the camp. That's referring to our passage here in Leviticus 4. Therefore, Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people through his own blood, suffered outside the gate. So let us go to him outside the camp, bearing his reproach. So Jesus, bearing the sins of the people, was not crucified inside the city of Jerusalem, inside with his people. He was put outside carrying a great deal of shame and degradation, and he was killed outside the camp, just as the sin offering was killed outside the camp. So the typology here is quite obvious how Jesus fulfilled this typology. And of course, the author of Hebrews says Jesus bore our sin outside the camp. We need to bear Jesus' shame outside of the people who give us affirmation and respect and money. Because when you're a Christian, a lot of times you don't get that. At some point, you're going to have to bear the reproach of Christ outside the camp. Leviticus 9:11, the flesh and the skin, however, he burned with fire outside the camp. Leviticus 16:27, the bull for the sin offering and the goat for the sin offering, whose blood was brought into the most holy place to make atonement, must be brought outside the camp, and their hide, flesh, and dung burned up. This is referring to the same law here. Numbers 19:3, you shall give it to Eleazar the priest, and it shall be brought outside the camp. Ezekiel 43:21, you shall also take the bull for the sin offering. It shall be burned in the appointed place of the house outside the sanctuary. So you see this idea of sin offerings being burnt outside the camp is everywhere in the scriptures. Now, what is the camp? Well, that was the area around the tabernacle and the courtyard. The area around the tabernacle and the courtyard. So I guess I need to point this out. Outside the camp is more than just being beyond the courtyard of the tabernacle. It's beyond the camp itself, where the Israelites lived in tents outside the doorway of the courtyard. You got the tabernacle in the middle. You got the courtyard of the tabernacle around that. And then you got the camp of the Israelites outside the courtyard. And then you're supposed to take the bull even beyond the courtyard. Beyond the camp of the Israelites, beyond the tents where the Israelite lives, way on outside. Now notice when it says you shall burn the bull had to be completely destroyed because the offerer's sins had been symbolically transferred to the bull. And so that bull had to be destroyed, showing that the sins had been destroyed. The bull, the rest of the bull, the remainder, could not be thrown on the ash pile. There was an ash pile in the clean place outside the camp, where ashes of sacrifice were placed. In Leviticus 1:16, we read this. This is talking about the burnt offering. He shall also take away its crop. That's the priest. Shall also take away its crop with its feathers and cast it beside the altar eastward. Or maybe not the priest. Maybe it was a Levite. Somebody should take the ashes. It should take the crop and feathers of a bird burnt offering and cast it beside the altar eastward to the place of the ashes. Now that's another place of ashes. That's in an ash pile that's within the courtyard of the tabernacle. Then they would have to go from there, pick the ashes up, go through the doorway of the courtyard, through the camp, and then outside the camp to the place where they would put ashes. And notice here, this the crop of a bird with feathers. That's more than just ashes. That sounds more like a trash heap to me. But at any rate, the effect of the sin offering was to get the sin outside the camp. We go now to Leviticus 4, verses 13 through 14. Now, if the whole congregation of Israel commits error, now we're moving from the sin offering for the high priest to the sin offering for the whole congregation. Now, if the whole congregation of Israel commits error and the matter escapes the notice of the assembly, and they commit any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and they become guilty, when the sin which they have committed becomes known, then the assembly shall offer a bull of the herd for a sin offering and bring it before the tent of meeting. Now, the first question I have is, how can the whole congregation sin? I thought only individuals could sin. Well, Adam Clark says that this idea is probably referring to some oversight in acts of religious worship that the whole congregation did. Now, that sounds nice. Well, I started scanning a lot of my available commentaries looking for an example, and I couldn't find one. Nobody seems to want to mention one. All the sins that are suggested are obviously intentional sins or grossly negligent sins, not talking about unintentional sins. So let me just make up a hypothetical example. Let's say the high priest accidentally miscalculates the first day of the month, does a math error in his astronomy, and then so now all the feasts are practiced on the wrong day. First day of the month was the Feast of Trumpets on the first day of the month. Well, got the first day wrong. Well, the whole congregation's in sin, have they not? And so they would need to offer a sin offering for that. It would be an unintentional sin. Notice that the animal for a whole congregation sin offering is a bull, just like with a high priest, because the high priest is equivalent to all of Israel. They're so closely tied. And I've got a question here. If the sin of the high priest transfers to the Israelites, to the whole congregation, and we know that it does because of verse 3, where the scripture says, if the high priest sins so as to bring guilt on the people, so his sin can bring guilt on the people, I wonder if the people's sin could bring guilt on the high priest since they're so closely connected. Of course, then you have to come up with a hypothetical example. How could the whole congregation sin and the high priest not sin? And again, I don't think the commentators think about that too much. Anyway, that's probably getting into it a little bit too deep here. Now let's go to Leviticus 4, verse 15. Then the elders of the congregation shall lay their hands on the head of the bull before the Lord. The bull shall be slain before the Lord. Notice that the whole congregation doesn't lay its hands on the bull because there was about 600,000 men. That's not going to work. They had to have some kind of a meeting where the leaders representing the congregation would lay their hands on that bull. For example, if there are 12 tribes of Israel, why not 12 elders? They shall lay their hands on the head of the bull before the Lord. That means in the court near the altar of burnt offering, as John Gill says. That altar stands for the Lord. So before the Lord, before that altar. and the bull shall be slain. Again, I'm speculating on the north side of the altar, just like with burnt offerings. The elders shall lay their hands. Some people say that each elder lays one hand, and so you got plural hands because you got more than one elder, or each person's laying two hands on the bull. It doesn't matter. So let me summarize the sin offering for the people as done by Gil. The sacrifice belongs to the people. Then the people offer it as atonement for their sins. And this offering shows that the people are worthy of death because they had sinned. They had forfeited their lives by breaking the law. Then the people entreated God to accept the life of the innocent animal in place of his own, place of their own. And all of this is to be done with respect to the future antitype Jesus, who in the fullness of time should be made a sacrifice for sin. Let's go now to Leviticus 4, verses 16 through 21. Then the anointed priest is to bring some of the blood of the bull to the tent of meeting, and the priest shall dip his finger in the blood and sprinkle it seven times before the Lord in front of the veil. This is the same as for the bull sin offering for the high priest. The veil is the inner curtain separating the Holy of Holies from the holy place. He, the high priest, shall put some of the blood on the horns of the golden altar which is before the Lord in the tent of meeting, and all the blood he shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering, which is the doorway of the tent of meeting. Everything's exactly the same. He shall remove all its fat from it and offer it up in smoke on the altar. He shall also do with the bull just as he did with the bull of the sin offering. Now that means the bull that was offered as a sin offering for the sins of the high priest, what we've just talked about. And this bull that's offered for the sins of the people at large is just the same way. There ain't no difference, except, of course, who lays hands on the bull. In the case of the high priest lays the hands on the bull to transfer his sins to the bull. In the case of the offering for the whole sin offering for all the people, the elders of the people representing the people then lay hands on the bull, passing the sins of the people to the bull. So the priest shall make atonement for them, for the people. The high priest shall do this by sprinkling the blood in the same way it was done before. And they, the people, will be forgiven. And that forgiven means forgiven for their secular sins. Breaking the Levitical law unintentionally does not mean eternal forgiveness. Verse 21, then he is to bring out the bull to a place outside the camp and burn it as he burned the first bull. It is the sin offering for the assembly. The first bull referring to the bull as a sin offering for the high priest. So actually, this is not very difficult. This idea of being forgiven, verse 20, is a key phrase. It occurs nine times between Leviticus 4:20 through 6:7. Forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. There is forgiveness in the law. Of course, it's unintentional sins, but it is a type. It is forgiveness to a limited extent. It's civil forgiveness, Levitical forgiveness, and it's forgiveness for unintentional sins, but it's still forgiveness. That's the type. The antitype is Jesus, in which case we have complete forgiveness. All right, we go now from the common people. Excuse me. We go now from the whole congregation to when a leader of the congregation sins. This is in Leviticus 4:22 through 24. A leader, an elder. Verse 22, or a ruler. Verse 22, when a leader sins and unintentionally does any one of all the things which the Lord his God has commanded not to be done, and he becomes guilty, if his sin which he has committed is made known to him, he shall bring for his offering a goat. It's unintentional and unknown at first, and somebody probably pointed out to him, hey, you screwed up. So this leader shall bring for his offering a goat, a male without defect. Notice the animals change now. When we go from the whole people to just a leader of the people, a goat. And it's a male goat because he's a leader. The leader is male. He shall lay his hand on the head of the male goat and slay it in the place where they slay the burnt offering before the Lord. It is a sin offering. The place where they slay the burnt offering before the Lord is the northern part of the altar. The northern area of the altar in the courtyard. Now this leader could be the governor of a family or tribe. As John Gill says, Adam Clark says, it's any person who held any kind of political dignity among the people. Jameson Fawcett Brown says it's a civil functionary. So the leaders probably took care of legal disputes, administrative details, and so forth. Notice that a goat is offered instead of a bull. We see now a hierarchy of value. With rank comes responsibility. And so let's look at that rank. We go from people with higher standing in the community to people with lesser standing in the community. We go from people with higher economic means to people who have lesser economic means. So let's look at the hierarchy. We start with the bull. That's for the high priest and the whole nation. Then we go down to a male goat for a civic leader. He's prominent, but not as prominent as the high priest. Then we go down to a female goat or a female lamb for the ordinary Israelite. And then we get down to poor people. They can offer doves and pigeons instead of the goat and the lamb. And that was practical, too, because poor people couldn't afford a goat or a lamb. And then if you were extremely poor, you just offered a handful of fine flour. But everybody had to offer a sin offering. Everybody from high to low needed atonement for their sins. They were guilty. Remember, this is a mandatory offering. Now, I don't know how often this mandatory offering was mandated. I don't know the frequency of it. I think the way it worked was the Day of Atonement wiped out all unknown sins and unintentional sins. And these sin offerings were mandatory when the offeror became aware that he had committed an unintentional sin, then he would have to go say, I got to get this taken care of. Now in verse 24, it says, he shall lay his hand on the head of the male goat. I'm assuming that's the leader. John Gill has a strange statement. He says it's the officiating priest lays his hand on the goat. I don't believe that. Let me give you the verse where the north side of the altar is mentioned as the place to slay the burnt offering. Leviticus 1:11, he shall slay it, the burnt offering, on the side of the altar northward before the Lord. And so when the scripture here says the sin offering should be slain in the place where they slay the burnt offering, well, the burnt offering is to the north of the altar, so the sin offering goes to the same place. And quite frankly, even though it's not mentioned in other offerings, I bet you that everybody, they had a place there to the north of the altar where everybody slew their sacrifices. It's probably a busy place. We go to verse 25, Leviticus 4. Then the priest is to take some of the blood of the sin offering with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering. Now notice here, this sacrifice for the leader of Israel, which is where we are now, he doesn't put his blood on the altar of, on the horns of the golden altar. This is on the bronze altar of burnt offering in the courtyard. So there's a little distinction here. The rest of the blood he shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering, the same as with the blood of the bulls given for the sins of the high priest and all the people. So why the difference? Why here the blood is only put on the horns of the golden altar? Because the sin of the high priest and the congregation are more serious, according to Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. With rank comes responsibility. So blood had to be carried in close to the Holy of Holies where God was, I speculate, because the Holy of Holies is right there where the ark is, close to where the ark is. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says that the sprinkling of the blood on the four altars of the golden altar is further expiation, which is required because the sins of the high priest and the congregation affected the service of the tabernacle, not just their own personal sins. And so, therefore, somebody had to go into the tabernacle and atone for that sin so that the service of the tabernacle would be cleansed. I think that makes good sense. We go now to Leviticus 4, verse 26. All its fat, the sin offering, this is the male goat offered as a sin offering for the male, for the leaders of the congregation. And of course, all the leaders were male. All its fat he shall offer up in smoke on the altar as in the case of the fat of the sacrifice of peace offerings. Now, the fat of the peace offerings I've gone over in great detail in chapter 3. I'm just going to summarize that fat here. Liver fat, kidney fat, entrail fat, and plus the fat that's connected to the entrails. And then we throw the kidneys in too. The liver fat is a lobe of the liver. It's a fat covering over the liver. It's burnt up on the altar because that's the part that goes to God. And that's the same as it is in all these sin offerings. There's no difference with the fat. And in fact, it's the same as the peace offerings too. There's no difference between that and the peace offering fat. God gets the best part. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him, atonement for the leader of Israel in regard to his sin, the leader's sin, and he will be forgiven. Now, I'm emphasizing how the sin offering is the same for the leaders and the priest, except for the animal. But there's another exception, too. What happens to the remainder? In the case of the sin offering, the bull sin offering for the high priest or the bull sin offering for the whole congregation, the rest of the bull, besides the fat, was burnt up outside the camp. But not so in the sin offering for the priest. The priest would eat the remainder of the flesh. They would eat it in the courtyard. Now, that's not in this chapter. We'll see that in a later chapter, but I just point that out right now as we're going through. Now, we're getting ready to look at the ordinary people, common people's sins in verse 27, but let me say right now that the eating of the remains of the leaders or the common people's sin offering was done in the courtyard. The remains were not burnt outside the camp. So that distinction applies to both the leaders and the common people. So let's go to the common people, Leviticus 4, verses 27 through 31. Now, if any one of the common people sins unintentionally in doing any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and he becomes guilty, if his sin which he has committed is made known to him, then he shall bring for his offering a goat, a female. So now we have another distinction in the animal. This is a female goat for the ordinary common person. Without defect for his sin which he has committed, he shall lay his hand, that he there is talking about the offeror, the common person of Israel, he shall lay his hand on the head of the sin offering and slay the sin offering at the place of the burnt offering, which, as I said, is to the north side of the altar. The priest shall take some of its blood, the female goat's blood, with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and all the rest of its blood he shall pour out at the base of the altar. Then he shall remove all its fat, just as the fat was removed from the sacrifice of peace offerings, and the priest shall offer it up in smoke on the altar for a soothing aroma to the Lord. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him, and he will be forgiven. All right, the procedure for the sin offering for the common people is the same, basically, as it was for the high priest and for the whole congregation and for the civil leaders, those three examples we used earlier. The procedure is exactly the same, except for the animal used. The animal used here is a goat or female. We see later a female sheep could be used also. So now everybody's sin is covered, from the high to the low, from the high priest to the leaders to the average Israelite. Now it's a female goat instead of a male goat because the male goat was more valuable. That illustrated higher status to the leaders over the common people. Now no lamb is mentioned as an option but here in this verse, but if we drop down to Leviticus 4:32, we read, "And if he brings in a sheep for his offering, for his sin offering, a female, a perfect one, he doth bring it in." So there we see that a female sheep is allowed. Now, sheep to me is not specific enough to say it was lamb. That was Young's literal translation I was using. It just says sheep. Sometimes people use lamb. I really think that the translators are kind of fast and loose with the English words. I'm not really sure, but let's put it this way. An animal of the sheep family is allowed for a sin offering offered for the common people. Once again, the blood is smeared on the four horns of the altar of burnt offering, not the golden altar, but the altar of burnt offering in the courtyard, the bronze altar. Those four horns were symbols of the atoning power of the sin offering because horns stand for power. Now, this sin offering, the Greek word is harmation, used here in 2 Corinthians 5:21, is, of course, fulfilled in Christ. 2 Corinthians 5:21, "He made him who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf so that we might become the righteousness of God in him." Now, of course, making Jesus who knew no sin to be sin, that has led to confusion. It's confused me, and I know there's some heretics out there who want to say that Jesus, therefore, was no longer perfect because he was made to be a sinner, is the way they put it. But actually, that word for sin is harmation, which is a sin offering. In fact, the Holman Christian Study Bible note has sin offering there, and I don't know why the translations don't just go ahead and say yes, sin offering. God made Jesus, who knew no sin, to be a sin offering on our behalf, and it becomes much clearer there that Jesus is not a sinner. He's rather a bearer of sin, but he is not essentially a sinner. Of course not. Leviticus 4:32-35, and we'll finish it up. "But if he brings a lamb as his offering for his sin offering, he shall bring in a female without defect. He shall lay his hand on the head of the sin offering and slay it for a sin offering in the place where they slay the burnt offering." That's the north side of the altar. "The priest is to take some of the blood of the sin offering with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering." Again, to show the power, the four horns stand for strength, to show the power of the blood to carry away the sins. "And all the rest of its blood he should pour out at the base of the altar." Again, showing that life is in the blood, the offerer is pouring out his entire life to God at the altar. And of course, the lamb is doing that as a substitute. Verse 35, "Then he shall remove all its fat, just as the fat of the lamb is removed from the sacrifice of the peace offerings." No difference. Liver fat, kidney fat, liver fat, entrail fat, plus fat connected to the entrails, plus the kidneys themselves. "And the priest shall offer them up in smoke on the altar on the offerings by fire to the Lord. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him in regard to his sin which he has committed, and he will be forgiven." And of course that means forgiven for sins temporally, not eternally. As Jameson Fawson Brown puts it, forgiven means a formal, forgiveness here means a formal deliverance from a secular penalty. Deliverance from eternal sanctions only comes through Christ. Hebrews 9:13-14. For if the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling those who have been defiled sanctify for the cleansing of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God? Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Leviticus 4, verses 1 through 35. In our next audio, we'll take up Leviticus 5, 1 through 19, the entire chapter. We'll finish up with the sin offering, part 2 there in chapter 5, and then we'll look at the guilt offering, or sometimes people translate that as the trespass offering. I hope to see you then. Hope you enjoyed this audio.